Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 17th April 2018, Tuesday class, held at SS2, my house. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully visha, commence the puja chanting. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansiin Fusa. Namo Guansiin Fusa. Namo Guansiin Fusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milafo. Namo Milafo. Namo Milafo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page 1. We will chant the Vandana. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sura meraya majapamadatana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Now we are chanting the padipa puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena Dipena tamadangsina Tiloka dipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambara yutena Dopena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang tang Puja baca namo temang Vanna ganda guno petang Etang kesuma santatin Pujayami monindasa Siri pada sarorohe Pujemi budang kesume nanena Punena metena cehotu mokang Pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasa bawang Adivase tuno bante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutemang Adivase tuno bante Pale parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutemang Adivase tuno bante Bojanang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutemang
Let us now chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruits of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition sooner as possible. Then significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate wisdom, born-free Nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay homage, Tripa Jam. Bedang Pujayami. Mang pujemi Sanghang pujemi Okay, you can be seated. We can have half an hour of meditation. Huh? Never mind. Just put it anywhere. Okay, let us rejoice with the offering. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Wow, Yun Chang brought a mixture of three types of fruits. Very nice. Very good. Sadhu. Okay, we off the light. Then for those who already know how to meditate, you proceed straight away. Then those who still need to train the mind, you go ahead. Whatever skillful means, up to you. Whether you want to start with mind sweeping method, followed by metta, then stabilize the mindfulness with anapanasati. It's up to you. If your spiritual faculties are already there, you technically don't need to train. The moment you relax, silent, you are in the meditative state. Without mental hindrance, you will automatically develop the ability to enter the sati or meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner mindfulness straight away, because there is no mental hindrances. When the spiritual faculties are developed and stabilized, mental hindrance cannot arise. For those whose mental hindrance are still not stable, they may arise for a while, especially the heedless thinking. So what you do is you just relax into it, silence everything, and allow the mind to naturally slow down, the thinking, the activity slow down. Then it will come back to its original state of still silence. So that is the third way that the Buddha teach to overcome heedless thinking, unwholesome thought and all those things. You just relax into it, silent, don't do anything. Don't resist, don't fight, then you don't create mental hindrance. Your mind will be peaceful. Okay, I will set the alarm, then you all continue your meditation. I will ring the bell after about 30 minutes.
continue with our invocation to the devas. Then to page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atraha gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkhadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo tassa bhagavato. Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo tassa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo tassa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabho Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Yapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Samichi patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjari karaniyo anutarang punyaketang lokasati sadu 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 okay, let's pay respect to Triple J. Buddhaṃ pujayami. Dhammaṃ pujayami. Sanghaṃ pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Yeah? Then we will continue from where we stopped. Eh? I think
Today I am supposed to go through the last week's discussion. I will do a complete review. It is based on the Buddha and his teaching. This text is by Narada, Venerable Narada. We are on page 270. Okay, page 270, The Dhamma. The title of this chapter 15 is The Dhamma. So this word Dhamma is very important. Dhamma is another name for the Buddha's teaching. And Dhamma basically is truth, all of truth that the Buddha came to realize. So this truth are very unique truth. That's why the essence of his teaching is called the Four Noble Truths. And these are called Noble Truths because if you understand this truth, you awaken to it, it will transform you and make you a noble ones. That's why it's called Noble Truth. And noble ones during the time of the Buddha, they are called enlightened beings. The Pali word is Arya. Aryas are noble ones. Arya Satcha is noble truth. Satcha is true. So this word is very useful. That's why if you are not familiar with the Buddhist teaching, you may not really have good understanding of this word. The Triple Gem, Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, these are, according to the Buddha, the real gems in this universe. That's why we all, as Buddhists, we take refuge in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the Buddha said these are the most refuge safe or secure refuge, because apart from these three things, you cannot find his teaching. His teaching can only be found in this tree. The first one is the Buddha himself. Without Buddhas or Sammasambuddha, you cannot find his teaching. Then, without the Dhamma, you also cannot find his true teaching. Then the last of the three gems are the Aryan Sangha. Aryan Sangha means the enlightened disciples of the Buddha, or order of monks that has already realized the truth. Then the next heading is, what is Buddhism? According to Majjhika Nikaya, the Buddha said, this teaching is very profound, hard to see, difficult to understand, calm, sublime, not within the sphere of logic, subtle, to be understood only by the wise. So this is the uniqueness of the teaching. Then also, like I have explained, towards the end of the last Tuesday class sharing, this particular teaching of the Buddha, which we call the Dhamma, it is very unique, very, very special, very powerful, and it covers a very, very comprehensive understanding. In fact, the whole of this universe, both the mundane and the supramundane, the understanding are covered by this Dhamma, the teaching. So whatever that the author had tried to promote the Buddha's teaching, yeah, by justifying many things, yeah. And he even tried to explain, yeah, in his own way, yeah, by comparing with other religion. And also, when people ask him, is Buddhism a philosophy? Is Buddhism a religion? So the way he answers is based on his limited understanding. But when you have the understanding, it's way beyond what the English language or the European people's traditional understanding. Theirs are very limited to just the few things that they have evolved and developed. Even though in the field of science, technology, they have progressed. And because of that, they are limited to psychology, religion, philosophy, and all these are within the field of thought. What the Buddha had taught us is way beyond what they understand. What the Buddha had taught us is not only within the field of thought, consciousness, and its content. That's why he got this word citta. But he even has this word sati. Then the unconditioned. Then the realization of the unconditioned, which is Nibbana. So his teaching is very profound, very deep in its depth, and it's beyond thought, beyond mind, beyond logic, like what he defined. So whatever that is knowledge-based tend to point towards logic, because they try to solve things through logic. Then not only it is beyond thought, beyond words, it is also very difficult to understand according to the Buddha. They're very hard for people to realize it. Although here they use the word hard to see. The word here see is not your normal seeing, the one that you use your physical eye to see. That is very limited. The true seeing is the direct seeing with the true mind, with the pure mind. And that one is a different type of seeing. Then that type of seeing can awaken the living beings. That's why the Buddha said, this teaching is very profound, difficult to understand, hard to see. Then not only that, it is calm, sublime, not within the field of logic, subtle, and can only be understood by the wise, nobody else. That's the uniqueness of this teaching. Then because of the title, what is Buddhism, we need to be careful about this word, Buddhism. What is your understanding? Why did they use the word Buddhism? The Buddha's teaching was never called Buddhism, is it? Who used the word Buddhism? Who used the word Buddhism? Give it a try. Definitely it's the English people, isn't it? And the English language, you know, all religion, they just add in the ISM at the back. You realize or not? So when you got an ism behind, because he is the Buddha, understand not? And he put the ISM at the back, then it become Buddhism. All the ism means they don't really have a name for it, but they call it your teaching. And because of the limitation of the Western philosophy, the Western understanding of mind, they only understand the mundane aspect of mind. things that are within the mundane world. That's why they use the thought a lot, and they went very extensive within the field of thought. And the field of thought is very suitable for mechanical things, to learn physical things, scientific things, knowledge within the field of logic and all those things, evolving memories, then views, opinion, conditioning. So all these are within the field of thought. So when this word Buddhism is being used, people tend to argue. So if you are a true Buddhist, I will use the whiteboard. If you are a true Buddhist, you should have this clear understanding of what this word is all about. Do not be deceived by this word. Buddhism. So they always say Buddhism is the teaching of the Buddha. But the Buddha, during his time, he never used this word. This word come from the English way of arising language. Because the teaching is by the Buddha, so they add in ISM at the back, it becomes Buddhism. So if you use this word, you will debate and you will be very confused. Because you completely don't understand what's the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha's teaching is basically Dhamma. So the true teaching of the Buddha is Dhamma. When you understand this word, you will understand his teaching. And this word, the nearest is truth. Means the Buddha teaches the truth. And the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the noble truth or Aryan truth. When you understand it that way, the development of understanding, which is wisdom, that can be beyond thought, beyond mind, will be understood. Otherwise, you are limited. So this very important word, Dhamma, if you develop the theory of it, you will not understand much, because it becomes theoretical. Knowledge, thought-based, mind-based. But if you were to meditate on it, develop the awakening through the realization of the true mind, then using the true mind to insight into phenomena, to understand the universal characteristics of all phenomena, then you will have different type of understanding. That's the reason why this teaching is very complete, very profound, just like what the Buddha described. So this Dhamma is, to me, is like when you understand the Dhamma, you understand the secret of life. Secret of life means all of life. Means both the mundane and the supramundane. This is how unique the teaching is and how powerful the teaching is. It's not only within the mundane existence. All of the mundane understanding of existence, it also includes the supramundane, means beyond the mundane. That's the reason why it can develop the understanding of the supramundane, which is the unconditioned. So this aspect is very important. You bear this in mind, then I will take you along into the sutta proper. Buddhism is normally defined through his three basket of teaching, they call it, or the Tipitaka. Because this is like the Christian, they have a Bible. Whereas the Buddhist teaching is based on compilation of all the discourse, the teaching that the Buddha has taught. That one constitutes one basket. Then it also covers the Vinaya rule, which is the discipline or moral discipline, the monk's rules. Then later they emitted the bhikkhuni, the nun's rules. Bhikkhus and bhikkhuni are monks and nuns in the Buddhist tradition. You call them bhikkhu or bhikkhuni. For ladies, it's bhikkhuni when you ordain. Then they also have upasika and upasaka. Then they also have samanera and other things. These are the various words as you go into the cultivation. Then most people, before they become monk, they will go and try it out as samaneras. Then sometimes you take the precepts, maybe 8 precepts or 5 precepts. Then you have some who take 10 precepts. So those who take precepts but haven't ordained, they are called upasaka and upasikas. Then the Tipitaka is very unique because it has a third basket. They call it the higher teaching, Abhidhamma. So when it comes to Tipitaka, these teachings are called Pitakas. Pitakas are the various division of its teaching. So if you were to develop the understanding of this Tipitaka, it will be too voluminous or too troublesome, because according to a lot of Buddhists who, I don't know why they like want to express it in such a way that their Tipitaka is so much thicker and more than the Bible. You realize the Bible only one book. Tipitaka is voluminous and a lot. But to me, you can concisely define all truth into one simple book. I think that is a better way of having it. But the Buddhist community seems to be very proud of their voluminous teaching. So if you were to ask me frankly, I will tell you, don't go into the Tipitaka so fast. Because by the time you go to the Tipitaka, I think you would have become very old before you finish reading them. It's not really necessary. More important is develop the understanding of the Sutta Pitaka. Sutta Pitaka means the discourses of the Buddha that cover all of his teaching, the essential Dhamma. So these are more important. Leave it to the scholar, the Tipitaka. Leave it to the scholar. Yeah, the scholar like all this. And they are like very detailed. But when you have the Dhamma, when you awaken, whatever Abhidhamma or what, when you read, you will understand. But before you awaken, no point. It's all theory. That's the reason why I said if you just study as knowledge, thought base, it's not useful. Yeah. But Dhamma is to be cultivated. You have to put it into practice. That's the reason why the Buddha said Dhamma is to be cultivated in three phases. He said phase one is Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. Yeah. So the learning of the teaching can be through listening or through Dhamma discussion, yeah, or even through reflection, contemplation on the Noble Truth, yeah, or the discourse that the Buddha has proclaimed. Then after you have reflect and contemplated, you develop another level of wisdom. Yeah. So this wisdom is more stable. Yeah. Because after you have heard it or read about it, then you reflect on it, contemplate and inquire into it, you develop another level of wisdom. Then finally, when you meditate on it, you will insight into the phenomena and develop the ultimate wisdom, which is Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of cultivating the Dhamma, the meditative discipline or the meditative training. Mm. Then the second phase of Dhamma is called Patipatti. Phase one, you just learn. Then when you put it into practice, it becomes Patipatti. So putting it into practice is you go for the contemplative training, reflection, inquiry, or we call it the second turning of the Vulnerable Truth. Yeah. Listening and reading up is called the first turning. Mm. Then the third turning is when you put it into real meditative practice or cultivation. Yeah. So Patipatti is the most important. Yeah. After you have learned about this teaching, you have to put it into practice. And the best way to cultivate it is within daily life. Life itself is where the Dhamma is. And you cannot train your mind to be heedful, to be mindful. There is no way you can cultivate this teaching. That's the reason why before the Buddha passed away, he told the monks, he told the lay people to. He said, Apamadena Sampadeta, strive on with heedfulness. So this message, if you understand, then you will see the importance of cultivation. Mm. If you don't put it into practice, if you don't train your mind to be heedful, you cannot develop the meditation, the meditative training. Okay, now I will read to you the Tipitaka. The Buddha passed away, but the sublime teaching which he expounded during his long and successful ministry and which he unreservedly bequeathed to humanity still exists in its pristine purity. This is according to Theravada. According to Theravada, because a lot of the essential Dhamma are passed down through chanting. That's why they are still authentic or pristine. But they miss out one part. The interpretation of it, the understanding of this teaching is actually very, very, very rare already. Or I should say, the understanding part is very different from the time of the Buddha. It has lost its, they use this word, potency. You know what is potency? Like power, potency. Means it's very potent. If the understanding of this Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us is still the authentic, pristine Dhamma during the time of the Buddha, do you know what will happen to the world? There will be a lot of enlightened beings, just like during the Buddha's time. A lot of arahants, a lot of anagami, sakadagami, and sotapan. Yeah. And these enlightened beings, they can arise. Because in the Parinibbana Sutta, the Buddha mentioned very clearly to what is his name? Subhana, is it? Not Subhati. Subhada, I think Subhada. Because Subhada came and asked the Buddha before his passing away in the Parinibbana, and he was the last disciple that take refuge with the Buddha before his Parinibbana. So he asked the Buddha, he said, I heard you are going to die soon. And because of that, I have this doubt, this question, and I need you to help me to understand. At first, Ananda was reluctant to let him in because he said, no, the Buddha is too sick to see you. Then when the Buddha overheard, the Buddha knew the condition and he told Ananda, don't stop Subhada, allow him in. Then he told Subhada, he said, ask what you want to ask. Then Subhada asked him in a very nice manner. He said, there are a lot of teachers, religious teachers, that came by and proclaimed their teaching, spread their teaching. And almost most of them claim that they are enlightened. They have the truth. They have the Dhamma and all those things. Then he asked the Buddha, what say you? How many of them really have and how many of them don't have? Then the Buddha told Subhada straight away, he said, Subhada, don't waste your time on all this. He said, I will explain to you. He said, you listen carefully. He said, then he didn't even want to mention his teaching or Buddhism or what. He said, in whatsoever teaching that you heard from, if within the teaching there exists the Noble Eightfold Path, that is the true teaching. And within that teaching, he said, there will be noble ones, enlightened being of the first stage, second stage, third stage, and the fourth stage, Arahant. Then, as long as the world has this teaching, wherever you go, he said, if the Noble Eightfold Path exists, the world will not be empty of enlightened beings. So that shows the importance of this Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. And this is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's the reason why he put it under the Fourth Noble Truth. Under the Fourth Noble Truth, he said, whoever who cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So the reason why we meditate is to develop the wisdom to become enlightened, isn't it? To awaken, isn't it? After you have become enlightened and awakened, that wisdom will prevent you from having any more suffering. So that's the reason why this Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. So this part is very useful. Then the author continued, although the master has left no written record, because during that time, there was no writing of his teaching, his disciple preserved them by committing to memory and transmitting them orally from generation to generation. So this one helped to preserve the teaching, but not the understanding of the teaching, understand? Preserve the oral language of the teaching. Then 3 months after the death of the Buddha, in the 8th year of King Ajatasattu's reign, 500 preeminent arahants concerned with preserving the purity of the teaching or the doctrine, they held a convention. They call it a convocation at Rajagaha to rehearse it. It's actually, they call it the Buddhist Council. The Buddhist Council. That was the first Buddhist council. The Venerable Ananda Thera, the Buddha's beloved attendant, who had the special privilege and honor of hearing the sutta from the Buddha himself, and the Venerable Upali, Thera, were chosen to answer questions about the Dhamma, or the teaching, and the Vinaya, respectively. So these two monks are chosen. So this first council compiled and arranged in its present form the Pali Tipitaka, which represented the entire Buddha's teaching. Then two other councils, you read the notes, is mentioned on page 19 and 50, earlier on we have gone through. There are two other councils of Arahant were held 100 years and 236 years later, respectively. Again, to rehearse the words of the Buddha, because attempts will be made to pollute the pure teaching. So there were some argument going on as to interpretation of the true teaching. So in order to preserve them, they hold the second and third Buddhist council. Then, about 83 BC, yes, the Buddha was born in the year 500 over BC, I think. 500 over BC. So, it's about 500 years later. During the reign of the pious Simhali king, Vatagamani Abhaya, a council of Arahant was held, and the Tipitaka was, for the first time in the history of Buddhism, committed to writing. So you should be able to understand why this teaching is no longer the authentic teaching of that time, where it was only committed to writing about 500 years later. So this writing was done at Aluvihara in Ceylon or Sri Lanka today, and now we call it Sri Lanka. Then thanks to the indefatigable effort of those noble or foresighted Arahant, there is no room, either now or in the future, for higher critics or progressive scholar to adulterate the pure teaching. So they believe, after this was committed to writing, there is lesser chance of pollution or distortion. Then the voluminous Tipitaka, they are very proud of those volumes, which contains the essence of the Buddha's teaching, is estimated to be about 11 times the size of the Christian Bible. So this one to me is not important. The word Tipitaka means three basket. They are the basket of discipline, or we call it the Vinaya Pitaka. Pitaka. The basket of the discourse of the Buddha. Sutta Pitaka. Where Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. Then the last one is the basket of the higher teaching, or they call it the ultimate doctrine, Abhidhamma Pitaka. So these are the three divisions of the Buddha's teaching. And these are compiled according to the first council, second council, third council, and the fourth council. The Vinaya Pitaka, which is regarded as the sheet anchor of the holy order, deals mainly with the monks' rules and regulation. Monks and nuns' rules. For nearly 20 years after the enlightenment of the Buddha, no definite rules or Vinaya were laid down for control and discipline of the Sangha. Subsequently, as occasion arise, the Buddha promulgated rules for the future discipline of the Sangha. Reason for the promulgation of rules, their various implications, and specific Vinaya ceremony of the Sangha are fully described in the Vinaya Pitaka. The history of the gradual development of the Sasana from its very inception. Sasana is the Buddha's dispensation. How long the teaching will last. A brief account of the life and ministry of the Buddha and detail of the three councils are some other additional relevant content of the Vinaya Pitaka. Yes, they want to record all this. Indirectly, it reveals useful information about ancient history, Indian custom, ancient art and science. One who reads the Vinaya Pitaka cannot but be impressed by the democratic constitution of the Sangha, their holding of possession in common, the exceptionally high moral standard of the bhikkhus, and the unsurpassed administrative ability of the Buddha, who anticipated even the present parliamentary system. Then Lord Zetland writes, and it may come as a surprise to many to listen or learn that in the assembly of the Buddhists in India, 2,000 years or more ago, are to be found the rudiment of our own parliamentary practices of the present day. That's why the author is trying to quote this, because this particular Englishman, I think Lord Zetland, he must have encountered Buddhism, studied Buddhism. That's why he was very impressed with the Vinaya Pitaka. Mm. But I would like to explain a little bit on this first 20 years. First 20 years of the teaching. The Buddha, after he became fully enlightened, he teach for 45 years, remember? How come the first 20 years no need rules? No need rules. Why? Oh, very good. You, Chana. Because they are mostly Arahants. And initially, they are all Aryas. Yeah. But then, like any organization, initially, when you start, they are always very, very obedient, respectful, full of gratitude, and they are very sincere, full of faith. They cultivate. Then because of the Buddha, he is the Samasa Buddha, his nature is very special, very different, then his parami is also very unique. So later on, when a lot of those beings that have affinity to Buddha, especially the top 10 disciples and all the other monks that have affinity with the Buddha, even lay people, the moment they come, not long, they become enlightened beings. Yeah. And the first five, you know, the ascetic, they were close to him. Immediately after the first sermon when he delivered, one of them, Kondanya, became a Sotapan, first stage of sainthood. Then he followed with another sutta, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which I share with you all at the retreat. Immediately, all five become Arahants. And during that time, it was so powerful, so potent. Then later on, all the other monks that has affinity, they came and they take refuge. Then you hear in the sutta, thousands and thousands, sometimes the fire sermon, 10 of 1,000. Then even in the Devarim, there were millions. Instantly become enlightened. So during the time of the Buddha, that potency is there, and because most of the monks, they were enlightened beings, then like Yun Chan say, no need rules. Understand? When rules are required, means just like our society, how does it develop? When they realize a lot of crime they cannot cope, then what do they enact? They enact law to punish criminals. That's why they later on they find it so rampant, because good money like drug, they have to put for the death sentence. Then like China, the communist China, corruption was so rampant. What do they do? If they caught you for corruption, what do they do? They sentence you to death, and they just shoot you. Qiang Pi. They use the what, rifle or what? Now I think no need rifle. They put you on the electric chair. Or injection, euthanasia, then harvest your organ. So a lot of things. So all these rules, always remember, when you have rules, it's chaotic. You understand? That's how you realize why I call it Kayanamita. I don't have rules. Correct or not? You all can join anybody. You can do what you like. But don't quote me. Because I only share the teaching with you. The moment you need to discipline and introduce rules means that order has problem already. That's why it continual. Initially only 5 precepts for lay people, then 8 precepts for monks and other things. Then later on the precept grew until you know how many. 237 for monks. Then the bhikkhuni, 300 over there. Oh, see? Why so many rules? But they forgot one thing about Vinaya. No? And that is the most important, ultimate aim of the Buddha. The Buddha, in the Vinaya rules, he wants the monk to cultivate mindfulness, which was not mentioned there. All of the precepts start with the word what? I undertake the to abstain from things that you cannot do, understand not? That is to remind you to be aware, to be mindful. And these rules are so stringent and so strict is because as monk you have to be dead serious, understand not? Or even as nun, is to protect them. Because he realized the form and mind is very fragile. And you will violate all these rules because when you are not enlightened, when your wisdom is not there, your defilements are not rooted out. They are very potent. The Dhamma is also very potent. But the defilement is also very potent. That's why he make it so strict. If you break the major rules, the major offense, straight away you have to disrobe. No more chance. But if it's the minor rules, not so important type of rules, then they can have this uposatha. Certain day of the month, I think it's in between the first 15, in between, then the 15th to the 30th in between. They go by the lunar calendar. They call it the uposatha. The Sangha was sit actually. Then there's a senior monk who act as a head of Vinaya. Then you will have to, as monk, each and everyone confess whether you break any offense or not. Then they will set out the punishment. How you have to actually develop the repentance and all those things. Then major offense, the Sangha got to meet and either make a decision to disrobe that particular monk or nun. So all this are in the Vinaya rules, the Pitaka. You go and read, you will know. Last time there's a Singapore guy, dentist. He want to become monk. Then he didn't become monk. Then when he met me, he said, "Tio, you interested or not? I got this Vinaya book." Oh, I said, "I don't mind having a look." So he sent to me. Then when I read through, I didn't read all. I just read a small part of it. I realized the deep meaning, the training to be mindful. If you can keep the Vinaya rules, and you can remember what these rules are, otherwise you cannot keep them. True or not? Then you will be very mindful. Because for you to remember all this, you have to be ever mindful. Otherwise, impossible. Do you understand? There are so many things they cannot do, as monk. But they need to reflect, contemplate on the food. You remember? The 10 Dhamma we go through in what they call the retreat. You are no longer a lay person, understand? You already ordained. You must reflect that you depend on the food or the offering from lay people, the lay community, or from the the vihara or wherever you go and develop the cultivation and training. So when you are dependent on that, you have to make yourself worthy of the food, worthy of respect, shelter, they call it hospitality, yeah? Then food and medicine. So to be worthy means you really have to develop the cultivation, your purity, your virtue, your wisdom, your understanding. So all these are not mentioned by the author, and these are very important aspects. That's why for us lay people, even the five precepts, you don't think it's easy. Eh? We are without heedfulness or mindfulness, you cannot start. Then if you don't understand the importance of precept, significance of precept, how the precept comes about, basically through the first right view with regards to law of karma, and how the advice of the Buddha fall into place. Without all this understanding, you will not understand the significance of precepts, even the five precepts. And to cover that understanding take time. Then after that, when you see the importance, you have to train yourself to be mindful, and later on stabilize it to be ever mindful, for you to really have the ability to keep the precept. Otherwise you can't. You will violate them. You will break them. And all this are not mentioned within the text, the author. Then even when they put on their robe, when they are going about pindapata, walking, they have to be ever mindful. Then whatever they do, putting on the three layer or robe or whatever, they have to be mindful of all action or movement. Then standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, turning, stretching, everything aware. And this is within the Vinaya practice. Then when you see things, hear things, smell things, taste things, tactile feel of the thought that arises, the sankhara, mental thinking, you need to be mindful aware. That's why if you don't have all this training, it's not easy. That's the reason why the Buddha said, without mindfulness and heedfulness, actually heedfulness, you don't stand a chance. But the moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. As simple as that, the cultivation. Heedful means not only once a while, not only during retreat, no. Not only when you meditate, no. Heedful means in the midst of life, ever mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Means Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative, ever mindful and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme born free Nibbana. So this is the reason why this mindfulness training is very important. And the Vinaya Pitaka can help you develop this. That's why for you to become a monk, if you really serious, you have to be very, very different. That's why you have to devote yourself to the cultivation. And it's a full-time job, I tell you, as a monk. It's not easy. So this explains why the Buddha actually prefer to have the Sangha. Because according to the Buddha, in the earlier chapter we study, the sasana will last longer if you have the Sangha, the order of monks. So this is a tradition of certain Sammasambuddha. Then because of the Vinaya rule, if they maintain this rule, the Buddha realized from previous experience of other civilization that other Sammasambuddha has gone through. Because Sariputta asked him, this one only Sammasambuddha will understand, is it? Is it true, is it? Some sasana are very short, some are very long. And what's the reason for the one that has longer sasana? Then the Buddha explained, the one that lasts longer has this Vinaya, the monk's rules. Because with the passing away of the Buddha, you know how bad it will become or not. Yeah? During the Buddha's time, first 20 years no need rules. Then the next 25 years, so much rules. With the Buddha around. And a lot of them don't listen to the Buddha. At one time, the Buddha walked away. Yeah, they were fighting about themselves with Devadatta and all that. So what happened if the Buddha is not there? I tell you, without the monk's rule to regulate, it will go wild, I tell you. That's the reason why with these rules, the Buddha is willing to lay it down. It helps you in your practice, development of mindfulness, and at the same time, prolong the Buddha Sasana. So these are the two most important reasons. Okay. Yeah. So this one is not mentioned by the author. Huh? Okay, the Vinaya Pitaka, they got a lot of books. Yeah? First one is Parajika Pitaka. This one is on major offense. Then Pachitya, minor offense. Then Mahavarga, the greater section. Yeah? Yeah. Then the Chulavarga, the lesser section. Yeah? Then the Pavi Vara Pitaka. Yeah? So this one is on the epitome of the Vinaya. Yeah? Means they describe the Vinaya to its very maybe high level. Yeah? That's why they call it epitome. Then Sutta Pitaka. Now, this Sutta Pitaka consists chiefly of all the discourses delivered by the Buddha to both the Sangha and the Laities on various occasions. A few discourses expounded by the disciples, such as Venerable Sariputta, Moggallana, and Ananda, are incorporated and are accorded as much veneration as the word of the Buddha himself. Since they were approved by him, most of the sermons were intended mainly for the benefits of the bhikkhus, and they deal with the holy life and with the exposition of the teaching. There are several other discourses which deal with both the material and the moral progress of his lay followers. The Sigalowada Sutta, for instance, deal mainly with the duties of a layman, a layperson. There are also a few interesting talks given to children. So as a human being, we play many roles. When you are married, your duty as parent. When you are not married, your duty as a child. Then when you develop certain training or learning, you got your duty as a student. Then when you later on become very proficient and good, you develop the duty of a teacher. And you are employer. There's a Sigalowada Sutta teaching with regards to duty of employer and employee. And then duty of a wife, duty of a husband. All these are laid down. So you can read about them. This Pitaka may be compared to a book of prescription. Since the discourses were expounded on diverse occasions to suit the temperament of various person, there may be seemingly contradictory statements, but they should not be misconstrued as they were uttered by the Buddha to suit a particular purpose. For instance, to the self, same question, he would maintain silence when the inquirer was merely foolishly inquisitive, or give a detailed reply when he knew the inquirer to be an earnest seeker after the truth. So all this is quite normal because the Buddha is gifted in this ability. Then the Sutta Pitaka consists of the following five Nikayas. Nikayas are called collection. So the longest one is the Digha Nikaya, collection of long discourse. Then Majjhima Nikaya is the middle length discourse. Then Samyutta Nikaya, these are actually the short discourses. They also call it the collection of Kindle sayings. Then there is also the Anguttara Nikaya, collection of gradual saying. Then Kudaka Nikaya, smaller collection. So this fifth book again, they subdivide into 15 books. That's why very thick. Huh? So this 15 book, I think the important one is Dhammapada, number 2. Dhammapada. They put their way of truth. No, not correct actually. It's the various sayings of the Buddha. They are evergreen. Sayings of the Buddha. They compile them into Dhammapada. There are 423 verses. Then there are many other subdivision. They call it Vatu. Then this Sutta Nipata is also a very good sutta. Then the Udana also, the paeans of joys. Then if you want to know about Peta, there's a Peta Vatu. Then the Thera and Therigata means the Arahants and the both the Bhikkhu and Bhikkhuni Arahants. You can read about their gatha. Then Jataka story, birth story of the Bodhisattva. Then there are also this history of the Buddha, Buddha Vamsa. Then the Chariya Pitaka, modes of conduct. Then the last basket is Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma is the most important and most interesting of the three basket, as it does the profound philosophy. They use the word philosophy, which is not correct, of the Buddha, in contrast to the simpler discourse. Actually, the better word is the higher teaching. Abhidhamma, the higher doctrine of the Buddha, expound the Christian, how to pronounce it, Christian, the essence of his profound teaching. According to some scholar, Abhidhamma, Abhidhamma is not a teaching of the Buddha, but it's a later elaboration of scholastic monk. Tradition, however, attribute nucleus of the Abhidhamma to the Buddha himself. The matika or matrix of Abhidhamma, such as Kusala Dhamma, Akusala Dhamma, and the Abhyakata Dhamma, etc., which has been elaborated in the sixth book of Katavatu, were expounded by the Buddha to the Venerable Sariputta, is assigned the honor of having explained all this topic in detail. Whoever the great author or author may have been, it has to be admitted that Abhidhamma must be the product of an intelligent genius or intellectual genius comparable only to the Buddha. This is evident from the intricate and subtle patana pakarana, which describes in detail the various causal relation. To the wise truth seeker, Abhidhamma is an indispensable guide and an intellectual treaty. Here is found food for thought to original thinkers and to earnest students who wish to develop wisdom and lead an ideal Buddhist life. Abhidhamma is not a subject of fleeting interest designed for the superficial reader. So this is the author's point of view. I look at it differently. It's not just based on what he say. He said Abhidhamma is for serious people, is it? Not a subject of fleeting interest designed for superficial reader and others. Say. Because this book or this teaching, if you have not meditated, is very dry. You find it very, very dry. You are not interested at all because a lot of details, a lot of very, very minute detail, subdivision, explanation, and all those things. And you will not find it interesting. It's so difficult to understand in the first place. But all this, when you develop the meditative awakening understanding, you read through, you will understand, but you know a lot of these are written not by enlightened being. because a lot of the explanation is no longer authentic. And it's very different from the actual thing that the enlightened being go through. But most of it, the theory part of it, if you know how to summarize them out, it is still useful. Useful in certain sense only. Because when you make it theoretical, it's no longer useful. It becomes scholastic. It's like scholar, knowledge. It's no more the true teaching. Then the next page. Modern psychology, limited as it is, comes within the scope of Abhidhamma in as much as it is as it deals with mind, thought process and mental properties. But it does not admit of a psyche or a soul. And that one, I think Vivian was asking. So this one, the soul. You listen. It teaches a psychology without a psyche, means without a permanent and changing entity that you call a soul. If one were to read the Abhidhamma as a modern text on psychology, one would be disappointed. No attempt has been made to solve all the problems that confront a modern psychologist. Chitta, or consciousness, is defined. Thought are analyzed and classified chiefly from an ethical standpoint. All mental properties, or they call it cetasikas, or mental concomitant, or content of consciousness, are enumerated. The composition of each type of consciousness is set forth in detail. How thought arises is minutely described. That's why they talk about the 17 thought moments and all those things. Bhavanga and Javana thought moments. Bhavanga is your continuing stream of consciousness. When you are in a state of Bhavanga, means when you are asleep, the mind stream just flow through. We call it the Bhavanga consciousness. Then when you arise, the conscious mind is different. From Bhavanga, you arise and become conscious. Then you become conscious through your senses. So your senses, with the sense data coming on, then it will impact upon the sense organ. Then the mind also make contact. So it like depending on the strength of the sense data, like vibration for your hearing consciousness, it will imprint onto your eardrum. And your eardrum will set the vibration for the consciousness to receive. That's why they call it this imprinting thought moment. It imprints into your Bhavanga stream. Then it causes it to become conscious. I don't use the word aware. You become conscious because the content of consciousness went in already. Then they call it the various names. They have various names. Later on, when we come to that, we will go through that. Which are explained only in the Abhidhamma, and which have no parallel in modern psychology, are of special interest to research students in psychology. Irrelevant problems that interest students and scholars, but has got no relationship to one's deliverance, are deliberately set aside. So this one, he's trying to explain that the Abhidhamma teaching is so much more profound than the Western world. Because Western world, they deal mainly with psychology. So psychology is a field of study that study the brain, the memory, the thought, and all those things. But they are quite limited in the sense that they only restrict the word to thought. That one word thought actually got a lot of things inside there. That's why they say relatively the Buddhist teaching is so much more detailed. But all this breakup and all those things, if you don't meditate, you cannot understand. And why the Buddha break the human being or living being into the five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects, is also not described here. And the reason for the Buddha's teaching to come about in that way is also not described. That's why a lot of things are not there. Then they got the four ultimate last time at the retreat we went through. Matter is summarily discussed, but it has not been described for physicists. You know why this author has to qualify it? He knows the physicists under physics, they know a lot more than the four ultimates that the Buddha quoted. You know, the first ultimate is what? First ultimate is what? Form, rupa. Rupa ultimate. Atom, last time they say the smallest indivisible particle. And yet, the scientists discover, no, atom is very complex, very big. Within the atom, you still got a lot of things. You got the nucleus, you got the electron. Then within the nucleus, there is a lot more things. Then a lot of energy movement and all those things. So all this, that's why he say, but it has not been described for physicists. Means it's for what? For lay people, for monks to meditate on. But actually what the Buddha taught, the four ultimate, is not what they think. Do you understand? Not the ultimates of matter, understand not? The four ultimate refer to the ultimates of mind, understand not? You know what is ultimate of mind or not? What is mind? Citta is only one aspect of mind. Okay, when it comes to mind, mind. Basically, the Buddha teach what? There are two types of mind. True or not? The true mind plus the mundane mind. So the ultimate of mind is what? This true mind is what? UL Ultimate of mind. This true mind, the ultimate is what? The last one. No! This true mind is the unconditioned, understand not? What is that word? Nibbana, understand not? That's why he used this word Nibbana under the four ultimate. So this is one aspect of the true mind. Then this mundane mind got three. He said, got mental form. Rupa is an ultimate, is it form, mental form, physical form, external form. Then, what else? Yeah? They say there is citta. Then, the other one is what? Citta seeker. These are the ultimates of the mundane mind, understand not? Means consciousness and its concomitant or content or consciousness. That's why these four that the Buddha mentioned, the four ultimate, are ultimate of mind, are not ultimate of matter. And people who don't understand simply quote the Abhidhamma and tell people. He said, the Buddha said, form is an ultimate, he said. How can you say form is unreal, impermanent? But the Buddha himself say form is impermanent, isn't it? But the Buddha didn't use the word unreal. And the Heart Sutta is empty. That's why it's unreal. It's condition arising, cause of phenomena. And a lot of people who don't understand, they don't understand what these four ultimates are. It's the four ultimates of mind. That's why this author scared. He straight away qualifies it not for physicists. Actually, it's very, very deep in meaning and very profound in its meaning. Because he can talk about the ultimates of mind. You know. At that time, how many people understand mind? Very few. Your thought process and all those things. That's like, who are you? What are you? Is there a thinker behind the thought? All these people don't understand. For you, or most people, they will say, logical, isn't it? I think what? There must be a thinker behind the thought, isn't it? Otherwise, who think? Logical or not? You go and meditate and find out, is there a thinker behind the thought? No, nothing. And there is no soul inside there too, when you silence your mind. Everything is in a state of flux within the conditioned world. So all these are very, very deep in its meaning. That's why here the author say matter is summarily discussed, means not really in detail, but he don't understand. But it has not been described for physicists. Then he said fundamental units of matter, material properties, source of matter, relationship of mind and matter are explained. Because it's, they call it dependent origination. That's why E equals MC squared. Actually, matter are trapped energy, can be released. That's why all your table, all this form, like the tiles, they are metal, but they are trapped energy. That's why matter is energy. E equals MC squared, Einstein's theory. Abhidhamma does not attempt to give us systematized knowledge of mind and matter. It investigates these two composite factors of the so-called being or human being to help the understanding of things as they truly are. This is also a wrong description. The Buddha teach the form and mind is to let you understand that this fellow is not you, understand or not? This fellow is dependent originating. It's just like any phenomena, condition arising, causal phenomena. And it is not what the author say, to help the understanding of things as they truly are. So this part is not correct. He said he investigate these two composite factors of the so-called being or human being to help the understanding of things as they truly are. So, the five aggregate of form and mind is for you to understand that this is not real, not you. That's why you have to meditate on it, silence your mind to awaken to it. And the way he described the mind is very beautiful. He break it into four more aggregate. What can your mind do? It's all linked to the important teaching. That's why he said your mind can feel, can perceive, can arise mental state, thought process, thinking and all those things. Then your mind can also become conscious of things. Then a philosophy has been developed on those lines. Again, wrong. It's not a philosophy. Based on that philosophy, an ethical system has been evolved to realize the ultimate goal, Nibbana. Then, as this author, another author, Mrs. Rice Davis, rightly say, Abhidhamma deals with what we find within us, around us, and what we aspire to find. So this is another way of describing the mundane and supramundane, means the secret of life. It covers all aspects of life. While the Sutta Pitaka consists of conventional teaching, the Abhidhamma Pitaka consists of ultimate teaching. That's why here again, he don't understand. The Sutta Pitaka is not conventional teaching, understand not? These are Dhamma, these causes of the Buddha that can awaken you, enlighten you. Then Abhidhamma is not what as he described. He think is the ultimate teaching. No, it's not the ultimate teaching. They call it the higher teaching is because they try to describe more things to you. And this thing, because it's very sensitive, I don't want to go into it. But there are a lot of people who use this statement, no? If you cannot understand Abhidhamma, you cannot become enlightened. Do you know that? You heard of that? Yin-chan, you haven't heard of that? Without the understanding of Abhidhamma, they say. And now you know, a lot of people don't study Abhidhamma and yet they are enlightened. Not only enlightened, they become arahant too. So, a lot of people who emphasize on Abhidhamma, especially those with a lot of title and PhD, they tell you, without Abhidhamma, you cannot become enlightened. But for those who understand, it's the other way around. The Abhidhamma is too theoretical. Understand not? Because if you use that and try to cultivate, you go haywire. But you cultivate, awaken, then you read Abhidhamma, you understand everything. And you even know the author who tried to describe or explain doesn't have the understanding. It's the other way around. Because when I read the Abhidhamma after 1989, I realized it has its meaning. It was beautiful in its own way. That's why I can explain to you all the four ultimates and all those things. It's not what the book say, understand? What those people think and believe. It's not what this author say. And how do I know all this? I never study them. I only read them after I have developed the understanding. So all this, not until you have developed the understanding and the awakening, you can't understand. Then they have this, what they call, it is generally admitted by most exponents of the Dhamma that a knowledge of Abhidhamma is essential to comprehend fully the teaching of the Buddha, as it presents the key that opens the door of reality. This is the statement they base on. But here at least the author very smart. He used generally admitted. Understand not? By most exponent means argue on. People who argue on. Like you fight each other, exponent of the Dhamma, means you challenge each other for the Dhamma. That a knowledge of, see they use the word wrongly, someone, they use the word knowledge of Abhidhamma is essential to comprehend fully the teaching of the Buddha as it presents the key that opens the door to reality. Then this one we skip, Abhidhamma Pitaka, there are so many, seven of them, not important. Then, is Buddhism a philosophy? This is the topic, hotly debate. And what I told you, forget about it. Don't waste your time on it. Because the teaching of the Buddha is way beyond philosophy. Understand? Philosophy is still within the field of thought. Nowhere compared to the teaching, the Dhamma. So anyway, I'll read through to you. We are the author trying to promote and argue to favor the teaching. He said the sublime Dhamma enshrined in this sacred book deals with truths and facts that can be tested and verified by personal experience. This one is correct. This one is no doubt. And it's not concerned with theories and speculation, which is also correct, which may be accepted as profound truth today and thrown overboard tomorrow. The Buddha did not expound revolutionary philosophical theory, nor did he attempt to create a new material science. In plain truth or term, he explained both what is within and what is without, so far as it concerns emancipation, means liberation, from suffering, use of life, and reveals the ultimate path of deliverance or enlightenment. This part is okay. This part shows it that it is very much more deeper than just normal philosophy. But he didn't have the ability to say that it is the enlightenment born of realization of Nibbana, the unconditioned. Furthermore, the Buddha did not teach all that he knew. This one is the handful of leaf. We can skip. We have gone through. He taught what he deemed was absolutely essential for one's purification. Means just important for enlightenment. Then he quoted Heraclitus, believed that everything flows and that the universe is a constant becoming. So this philosopher, not bad, constant becoming. He got one part correct. Means it's in a state of flux, in a state of impermanent. He thought that nothing is ever, he thought that nothing ever is. Means not a permanent unchanging entity. Everything is becoming. It was he who made the famous statement that a person cannot step in the same stream twice. Then Pythagoras, Pythagoras is a mathematician and all those things. Then all this he tried to describe. They are famous philosopher of the Western world. He said the Buddha expounded this truth of transiency, means the three universal characteristics, suffering, and he used the word soullessness. Anatta. It's not soullessness. It's empty nature of existence. Not a permanent unchanging entity. More than 2,500 over years ago. The moral and psychological teaching, philosophical teachings of the Buddha are to be studied, to be practiced. Here is correct, to be practiced. And above all, to be realized. This one is also correct. This is Pariyati, Patipati, Pativeda, by one's own intuitive wisdom. As such, the Dhamma is compared to a raft which enables one to cross the oceans of suffering. Buddhism, therefore, cannot strictly be called a philosophy. And in that sense, he is correct. Where it's beyond philosophy. Where it's not merely the love of inducing the search after wisdom or the love of truth. Nor is Buddhism a hypothetical interpretation of the unknown as a metaphysics or of the inexactly known as its ethic or political philosophy. If by philosophy is meant an inquiry not so much after certain particular facts as after the fundamental characteristics of this world in which we find ourselves and of the kind of life which such a world is behove us to live. Buddhism may approximate to a philosophy, but it's very much more comprehensive. That one is correct. So you look at note 4. A philosophy is a sense of the epistemological system which furnishes a complete reply to the question of the what of the what is life that is not. So this one is limited to the field of thought. I think we have to stop here because time is up. So I will continue the balance maybe next Tuesday. Today, I visited Brother Xia and Nancy together with my wife, Brother Sui An and Sister Mi Fong. We went and see him. So I promised Nancy, I said, we will, after the Tuesday class, share our merits, transfer our merits, and we invoke power of merits to help Brother Xia to have good condition, to have better consciousness, better mind states. And then whatever that is conducive for his future life and all those things. then may the blessing of the Triple Gem too be always with him. Eh? Then we will also invoke power of merit to help him in whatever way. Eh? So we will do that now. Eh? Okay. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the last 2 hours plus. Yeah? Then we will invoke power of merits for causes and conditions, for Sister Nancy and family, especially Brother Sia, to have the good life, the happy life. Then may all this wholesomeness pave the way for the blessing of the Triple Gem to be always with Brother Sia, Sister Nancy and family. And also may it give rise to the causes and conditions for them to realize their good and noble wishes as soon as possible. Then may it also arise the causes and conditions for Brother Sia to have good mind state. The calmness, the peacefulness, the mindfulness, the awareness, the tranquility and the stillness as he goes through the next few days or whatever lifespan that he may have, because most of the organ, according to Nancy, has failed. And they are not really putting in any more drugs and other things. Then, based on the doctor's advice, she had brought Brother Sia back. But he still looked good. With the, you call what, the tube for the oxygen on. Then also, the organ failure led to the grasp for air. That's why his mouth is constantly open to receive oxygen and all those things. But he is beautiful. The house has good energy. The vibration and all those things. And it could be due to the things that they have done, the Dhamma activity, especially the 2 or 3 house dana that they have held and invited us all as Kayamita over there. Then the devas too, they were very beautiful. Then I spoke to Nancy, next to Brother Sia, to develop the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. The form is only element. It goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick, and finally consciousness will separate. We call it death. But nothing dies. Then whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. These are fundamental, basic characteristics of nature. Then what is more important is to maintain the peacefulness of mind, the calm mind, the silent mind, and understand clearly mind is mind, body is body, body never the mind, mind never the body. Then through this understanding, later on, as the consciousness weakens, it weakens through a process. Because when the organ starts to fail, it will not support the consciousness. So the consciousness will have to leave. But before it leaves, the craving force that binds the consciousness to the body, they will start to dissipate. So I explain a little bit of this. Then I say, when it happens, just silence your mind. Be with it. Then the consciousness will be beautiful. Then when this happens, that mind will be free from the physical, what they call physical consciousness, especially tactile consciousness, the one that caused all the mental suffering to arise. So as this one release, it's like a relief. Then you can maintain mindfulness awareness through your daily practice and cultivation, you will be very clear about the death process. Then you will understand nothing dies. It's just the consciousness separate. The craving force dissipate. Then a lot of things will happen. And finally, whatever happens depends on karmic, and also depends on the wisdom, the understanding. Then the realm of consciousness can come out. But don't worry. Don't allow the karmic to condition the fear, the anxiety, fear of the unknown and all those things. So maintain faith. That's why I told Nancy to on the chanting music and all those things. Then recall the teaching of the Buddha. Then constantly talk to Brother Sia about the reality of the form and mind. And this is karmically conditioned for us to come to this world to use. So when the condition is no more, then just let it be. Then ask him not to worry. Means they have also expressed their gratitude towards what Brother Sia has done for them. Everything that needs to be taken care of has been taken care of, and the children all grown up ready. And Nancy is very strong. She understands. So all this has been explained, and I think Nancy has faith, and she has understanding. That's why she was able to do a lot of all these things, and she will continue to do her duty. Then the children all were very understanding. So we were there, it was beautiful. But I was told many people visited them recently, I think because of Sui An's WhatsApp message. But whatever it is, try to, like, if you want to go, you call Nancy first and let her know. Then don't, like, one at a time go. It's too difficult for her to attend to every one of you. So you try to carpool if you want to. Then pay a visit and you can see him. He's still okay. His form is still good. I was very surprised. He's still the old Brother Siha that I saw about 1 year ago. Except now is the organ has failed. He is not really fully conscious. So the subconscious has taken over because the form is just the form. But inside, he might have sati or awareness. But the house is very conducive. The energy is very good. So with this understanding, we, as Kanyamita, I promised Nancy and Brother Sia and family that tonight we will share all this merit, transfer all these merits, and invoke power of merits for all the wholesomeness that may accrue to them. So as Kanyamita, we should also know these are reality of life and existence. Every one of us has to confront them sooner or later. Some may be sooner, some may be later. But when you have the Dhamma, when you confront them, it's very beautiful because that form is not really what you think you are. So when you can detach from the form, you are beautiful. Like the Buddha said, the body can be sick, but the mind need not be sick. And all this understanding can be there. Then there can be joy within the mind. It can be very serene, very calm, very peaceful. Because when you can constantly recall to mind your practice, the Dhamma understanding, the contemplation and the cultivation, and recall to mind all of your wholesomeness that you have, really make full use of your life, this life. You have not wasted it. Because the amount of wholesomeness that you have developed as Kanyamita, attending the classes and the retreats and spiritual trip and all those things, your parami is beautiful, your understanding is beautiful. And this will make you develop the joy, the understanding, the gratitude, the love, the compassion, the respect and all those things. And these are very useful. Well, when the time comes, the karmic negativity cannot arise. The fear of the unknown, fear of death, all those things due to lack of understanding of the Dhamma, they cannot arise. You won't panic. You will not like normal people. This is how Dhamma can really help Kanyamitas and help us as true cultivators of the way. Then when these are very clear, your mind states are very beautiful, very different. Mm. So with this, we were, for the last time, radiate love and metta to Brother Xia. So we wish him all the very best in whatever condition that he may be in. May there be peace, may there be calmness, and may there be joy deep within his tranquil mind, stillness of mind, silent mind. Mm. Then we will also invoke the blessing of the Triple Gem. May the Triple Gem be always with Brother Xia, Nancy, and family. May it continue to bless them. And may it continue to bring forth all of the potency of Dhamma to help them develop the understanding and to help them to develop the good life, understanding of life. So with this, we will continue your sharing of merits with all beings. So starting with the devas, we will chant together. Akasata ca bumata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Jirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Itta Wata Jamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia sadu. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Then we end.